Hello and welcome to the Football Film Cast. It's your main man, Andy Gillard here. Hope everyone's doing well out there.
Hi everyone, Matt Guy here. How are we all doing?
No, it's Stu. That was not meant to rhyme, it just happened. Oh dear. What a cracky start.
Fucking hell, right. It's been a long old break since we've actually got any football coming up. So we thought we'd watch a football film. Obviously, that's the aim of the game when it comes to the Football Film Cast. This is one that was recommended by Stu. It's a film called A Shot at Glory, a film described as desperate times call for desperate measures. Losing soccer coach Gordon McLeod accepts the signing of Jackie McQuillan, a player with undeniable talent but a reputation as a team killer. The team needs a player of star quality, or it may have to relocate from their tiny town in Scotland to a larger market in Ireland. Starring Ally McCoist, Robert Duvall, and Michael Keaton, which is a sentence I never thought I would say. Stu, why did we need to do this one next?
Why didn't we? I mean, it came about because I think it was around about December time when Ally McCoist just appeared on Amazon Prime as a co-commentator out of nowhere. And he suddenly turned into a national treasure and everyone was talking about him. And for some reason, this film just came into my head and I thought, I'm sure I've seen him act. And I thought then no one had heard of it before. So I thought, okay. And I had a look and I found it out. And it's been mentioned as well on other podcasts since. But yeah, I watched this on a travel club couch in the early 2000s. So, suffering some shitty nonsense place like Colchester, probably, where it's far away, with 2 hours on a tiny 12-inch telly, 4 rows back, when you can hardly hear anything. It seemed okay, and that's probably why, because of them circumstances. But yeah, I thought, I haven't watched it for about 15 years, so why not? Let's bring it to the fore.
That's fair. The only film I can ever remember watching on a travel club was Trainspotting. And I think, yeah, it would have been mid to late 90s coming back from Bradford away when we lost 3-2. I think Jeff Thomas may have scored and Don Goodman. So that's how long back we're going. So I was definitely not old enough to see a dead baby crawling on a ceiling. Yeah, bit of an inappropriate film for it, but there we go.
I mean, Dean mentioned it when I said that sentence earlier to him, and he was there when we watched The Bone Collector on the way back from somewhere that once. it always seemed in either inappropriate films where you couldn't hear anything. So because everyone was either deadly silent or arguing and moaning at each other, or everyone was knackered, so you weren't concentrating anyway. It always, and then people complained, and then we had to watch season review videos from then on, and then I discovered the Atherton, and then things got better. But yeah, it was a glory time. It was a bad shot at glory.
So we are here to continue our challenge of ranking all of the football films that have ever been based upon the five pillars of what makes a good football movie. That would be the cultural impact, the footballing authenticity, the football stars, the non-footballing story, and of course, our overall enjoyment of the movie. This is exactly the type of thing that we do over on our other podcast. That would be Cage Fighting, where we're there to answer all of the big questions in film. For any fans of Peep Show, we've recently had an episode with Sophie's dad, Paul Clayton, and we've recently recorded a podcast with Canadian comic and former resident of the Golden City of Wolverhampton, Tom Stade. So please come and check us out over there if you enjoy your film, pop culture, TV, all of the nonsense that makes life worth living, I think. So before we get into the film, I think we need to do our pre-match warm-up. I need you to recommend a film, and in honour of this one, I'd like a film recommendation that is set in Scotland. Stu, start us off.
You've just stolen it, Trainspotting. It's the best Scottish film of all time.
It is a great film. I haven't seen the sequel yet, but I mean, the first one is exceptionally good. I am a fan of Irvine Welsh in general. I also really like Filth, both the film and the book. He's a really good pairing from him. So yeah,
T2 is decent. You know, it's actually quite good. It toes the line of nostalgia, but not for the sake of like padding out or for the sake of trying to get away with like poor script writing. It's really, really fun. And it probably tugs at the heartstrings in parts for characters that you wouldn't expect from the original Trainspotting as well. Definitely worth a watch. And I think like you could watch the two back to back and it not feel like they are, how many years now apart would it be? Like 25 years apart?
Yeah.
Like the characters are so like relatable in both. Really, really great film.
Hmm. Now, is it based on one of Welsh's books, T2, or is it like a...
Yeah, Filth. I think it's elements of Filth, basically. No, that might be a lie. It's elements of Porno, I think. Play out in
T2. Porno and Skag Boys, I think, direct sequels. But, okay.
Yeah, so when I read Porno, it was like it kind of mirrored it in a way. It goes along kind of the lines of what Sick Boy was doing around the time, and that bleeds into then what T2 does.
Okay, super. Matt, what's your Scottish recommendation?
Oh, it's a tough one, really. I know that I really enjoyed Neds. I don't know if you've ever saw that. It was, I can't remember what Neds stand for, something delinquents. It's basically the story of a young kid who was like a gifted and talented, fell into the wrong crowd, and then joins gangs and drinking drugs in Scotland, basically. It's about like neglectful parents and bullying and what the social status was like at the time during the film. It's good. Neds, check it out. It's one of those kind of very much in the same feel as kind of This Is England. Dead Man's Shoes-y kind of feel to it. Violent, but a good, fun watch at the same time.
It sounded like, have you ever seen Kids?
No, I have not.
Okay. Yeah, Kids, which is set in like South Central LA, if I remember correctly. And it's about a bunch of 12 to 14 year olds who end up doing drugs and one gets pregnant and like all the nasty shit that happens in life, but all to these young people. It sounded like that kind of thing.
Non-educated delinquents is what Neds stand for, apparently. And it has the excellent Peter Mullen in it, who gives a bit of growl to anything that he puts his name on.
Oh, very good. My recommendation is a film called The Angel's Share. And it's about a guy, young adult, who comes out of prison. And in order to, he tries to turn his life around. He befriends some fella who introduces him to the wonders of drinking whiskey. And it's just all about this friendship that these two people build up, and the young guy tries, as he's trying to turn his life around, but they want to do one last big score, so to speak, to set his life up as his partner becomes pregnant. It's a good mix of drama and comedy. It's got like a proper, I don't know, if you what you associate with Scottish humour is what that's got in it. Mm. Big fan. The Angel's Share, that one is. So here we go. It was filmed and produced in 1999, released July 2002. Wolves were about to embark on a season which finally saw them return to the top flight for the first time since 1982. It had been a long and bumpy road, but Dave Jones led Wolves into the playoff final against a much fancied Sheffield United team, only for Wolves to upset the odds and walk out 3-0 winners. 2 months prior to the film's release, Arsenal had won the Premier League and FA Cup double, with Ipswich, Derby and Leicester being relegated that season. Away from the football, summer 2002 saw the most Glastonbury band ever headline for the first time, when middle-class moaning minstrels Coldplay headlined Friday night. Nelly ruled the airwaves with Hot in Here before getting into a dilemma with Kelly Rowland in that same year. In the cinema, it was a surprise to nobody. Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers dominated, followed by Harry Potter 2, Spider-Man, and the worst of the Star Wars films, Episode 2, Attack of the Clones. Yeah. I propose we start with what I think is the weakest area of this film, that will be the cultural impact in my eyes.
Yeah.
Matt's nodding along, Stu. Yes. So take it away. What did you think of the legacy of this movie?
Well, what legacy is the question, really. I mean, you only got to look at the cover. I don't even think it tries to make itself look like a football film. It looks more like an extended episode of Emmerdale Farm when you look at the cover. But the only time I was made aware of it by my friends was through Quickly Kevin, who I think did an episode on it. I've never heard of the film, never heard of it. And it's a surprise, that is, because, and it's a surprise for two reasons. Surprise A, because of the cast, and surprise B, because of the quality of the film. But it's got next to no cultural impact because no one's ever heard of it.
Yeah.
It's a cult classic that no one's seen. That's amazing in itself.
Yeah.
Sorry, Stu, carry on.
There's absolutely nothing. I mean, I put a thing on Facebook just out of curiosity because of certain accents in the film. And my cousin-in-law answered, and he knew it, but he's Scottish. So maybe it's one of them things where it's a Scottish classic and nothing down here, nothing in America, which is, it seems to be its target audience. But, yeah, no cultural impact here whatsoever.
Now, when I was looking at the reviews from, like, audience reviews, almost all of them were Scottish. Like, there didn't seem to be many people at all who weren't from the from north of the border. So I do think the cultural impact is very much for Scotland and Scotland alone. I mean, we're nearly 20 years past this, and had it not been for Quickly Kevin, I probably would never have heard of this, which is quite an odd thing to say when it's a film which is starring Robert Duvall and Michael Keaton. Like, they're no... I don't know. I can't even think of an actor who would be comparable, who you'd expect to be in a low-budget British film from the States. They're like worlds apart from this kind of movie, so it's kind of baffling. The only reason I've given it a 1 rather than a 0 is because it does seem to have this bit of a notoriety now, purely based on this, the modern phenomena of podcasting, I think is where it's come from. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just a bit of an odd one, but this was definitely the weakest area of it. So I think we'll move on to the non-footballing story, which I think is obviously the meat of it. I think it may have played to a wider audience who didn't particularly know the game. But I did have a couple of issues with this movie that I couldn't quite resolve in my head. So the idea of a football club moving to a bigger market is still fairly unheard of in the UK, even with Milton Keynes Dons having done it. But the idea of a club moving country to do it, I don't see how a village team would do better in a complete foreign market. It just seemed to be a bit of a flawed view of football. I couldn't quite get that.
In 98, Wimbledon nearly moved to Dublin.
Is that why?
Yeah. As soon as he said Dublin, I thought, well, that's just Wimbledon then. When they were the Norwegian guy in charge, the manager, Egil Ostenstad, is that his name? I can't remember now. But yeah, there were definitely talks about Wimbledon moving to Dublin.
I hadn't heard that one.
Yeah, that's why as soon as you said that, I thought, well, this nearly happened. it's not a fancy Dan Hollywood idea. It was, and then they moved to Milton Keynes, which is kind of worse in a way. but yeah, that from that point of view, that is kind of almost based in fact.
Well, I took that bit more of like it was an ignorant American owner that would deal in franchises that move state to state, states being the size of countries. That's just the way I took it, that he didn't take the idea of how very different these countries are. Listen, I know that the Republic of Ireland isn't in the Union, but well, it's in one union that we probably still want to be in, but that's by the by.
That you want to be in.
It's not by.
Not to tarnish all the sensible people with your brush. Oh, yeah.
But I think it was, they were playing on the ignorance of the American owner, personally.
The other issue that I had, Glasgow Rangers' most well-known player of all time was playing a Celtic hero in this. Like, I get it's just acting, but considering the film was played out to a backdrop of sectarianism and the Old Firm bollocks, it just seems a real odd choice to have him down as a Celtic hero. And they had Didier Agat, who is most known for his time at Celtic, playing for Rangers. I'd really like to know why they made that decision. It seems so bizarre, because if it was a case of saying they had to get permission, you'd think that they wouldn't use either of those teams, or they'd change the name of one of the I couldn't quite figure that one out.
Well, I like to think it's an actual thought through process, and they're not mocking, but they are giving the two fingers to the sectarianism and the Old Firm by saying, actually, this film isn't about the football rivalry. It's about coming together, and that family is more important than football. So just to throw the cat amongst the pigeons, we'll swap the two around to just show, to de-emphasize the value of those ideals. I don't think this film is clever enough to do that, perhaps. But that's what I'd like to think would happen.
But then to badly colorize the shirt as well and take all logos off in these Ali's highlight reel. It was because Dream Team had done it. That's what it was like. And it was that era of using that. Well, we'll come on to the football itself. But yeah, it didn't make any sense, because when they showed these highlights for Celtic, it obviously wasn't in hoops, which is the main thing.
It looked terrible, didn't it? Like, it barely looked green. It was such a weird shade. I thought, that's fucking terrible, that is.
I had put some points around the authenticity around kind of... It's all bad points, really, but it's points to make me laugh. But even though I give it a 5... we're on non-football... Are we on non-football story now? Yeah. Hold on, I'm getting confused.
Yeah.
Hush my mouth. In terms of the non-football story, though, it played on the heartstrings in some aspects quite well, I thought. Like, he has the relationship between... the manager and his daughter. Then we've got the relationship between Adam McCoyston and his son. And then we've got the marriage that is on the rocks. And then we've got the father-in-law, son-in-law. And there's more meat on this bone than you think. And it does it, you know, the film that we watched with Sean Bean. Christ, what was that called again?
When Saturday Comes.
When Saturday Comes. It attempted to do that, but it was a football, like... It forced a football film down your throat, but then tried to play that story in the background. Whereas I think this married it up quite well. And then mixed with, you know, the sectarianism stuff, that they only showed like the negative side to all that, and that the Protestant and Catholic rivalry between the two, they never like glamorized it in any way other than it being a negative as well. And I think they did that quite well as well. I think the non-footballing story was decent in this.
Yeah, that's what I was surprised by how good it was, considering I'd watched it 20-odd years ago. Well, yeah, nearly 20 years ago, on a couch. And like I already said, you can't really take much away from that because of the situation of watching it on a screen that small to now. But yeah, they could have used... I mean, the cover makes it look like Babe Pig in the City, let's be honest. But with his flat cap and everything. But yeah, it didn't have to have as many layers as it did. And maybe that's how they managed to get the talent in the film that they did have, because it actually had a story rather than just, oh, we need boy from small village makes village good kind of thing. So, yeah, for me, I'll get it a solid 3 out of 5 for non-football story.
Mm. Yeah, I was the same. I thought outside of those couple of flaws that I mentioned, I thought it was quite an interesting story if you just looked at Ally McCoist's character. I thought it was an interesting look at a man who was at the end of his career, and a career where he comes across that he's probably played the prick a little bit throughout most of his life, that he's a bit of an immature dickhead. But he's got to the point now where he's working with his father-in-law, his marriage is not in great shakes, and he's given a chance. Like, the fact that they're going to their FA Cup final is almost like that's him becoming a grown-up. So the football is mirrored in his personal life, I think. I thought that was done really well. Like, it's not outstanding, and it's very paint by numbers. it's very much, if I was to see a footballing film, I would expect it to have a lot of the beats that this film has. But I don't mean that as a negative. I just think it's a genre film, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Obviously, the film is primarily about Robert Duvall, but I do think McCoist is the heart of the movie. I think it's a heartfelt performance. What did we think about the acting debut of Ally McCoist?
He was good. Again, no right being anywhere but shit, but he wasn't. Mm. And I mean, knowing that, I mean, I've spoken to Ally McCoist on Talksport a few times anyway, and small brag, but. He's always been a great guy, and he's always like all jolly, big jolly guy, and never once have I considered him to be an actor.
No, absolutely wouldn't.
I mean, the fact that this had completely gone from my mind for 15 years, and I hadn't thought about it since, I'm quite amazed, really, because it was a good performance. It was probably better than Sean Bean in Friends That He Comes.
Yeah,
he didn't look like a fish out of water at all. Even like the silly things, like when he's chasing after Jackie, pretty much every other line in this film was, "Ah, Jackie." That's all it was like, the whole way through. But even he didn't sound wooden. He didn't sound like he was forcing it on or anything like that. He just felt really natural, and it doesn't surprise you that he does so well with things like Talksport, things like co-commentary, and things like that, because he's just got this like natural way of just being someone you want to watch or listen to, and he does it really well. It's like the best scene I can describe that is when he's teaching his he's talking to his son about how to celebrate, like that you know, and he just felt really natural, like that could have felt so forced and wooden, but it didn't. It felt natural as an actor. Like you could convince people that he is an actor in this film alone, for people that don't like football and never heard of Ally McCoist. I think you could do that convincingly.
I mean, if you fast forward 5 years, could you imagine Harry Kane doing a performance in like that? Other than the part where he's actually on the floor rolling around, it'd be spot on with that part. But you got to think this was a guy who was still playing football. He won like Cantona, who'd retired, and Beckham, who made certain appearances in things, and Vinnie Jones later on, who'd retired. He was still playing for Kilmarnock. I'm sure he was at the time of filming.
I think he would have been, because I think he didn't retire like early 2000s. So he would have still been playing at that point.
Yeah. So to go to a different thing altogether, fair play to him. Really impressive.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad, Matt, you mentioned the child. So, on Cage Fighting, we've often pointed out how horrific child actors are. And that kid in this film was a right annoying little prick, wasn't he?
Yeah, it was dreadful as well. I said to you, Stu, about like when McCoist, I think, scores his first goal, he just makes this guttural wail of like that sounds like a 50-year-old bloke, but that just goes, "Daddy scored." it's like the worst noise I've ever heard.
Scottish, not Yorkshire.
Yeah. Well, I thought that as the sounds emanated from my lips. But yeah, he was abysmal. And like for all of the good actors in this film, they could have given like 50 quid to a kid actor to like knew what they were doing.
I did think outside of your main three actors, everyone else felt a little bit wooden. Like I know that most of the rest of the cast were made up of lower league football players, but they all felt very unnatural in front of the camera.
I think they all played these, you know, especially your real cast members, i.e. the tea lady, Doris, or real Brenda, I think it was. And then like the characters that you see repeatedly at the games, like the guy who abuses the goalkeeper or the guy you can't look. I think they're just kind of like looking at archetypes of footballing supporters. But that's where the film turned from all the good stuff that they do with the story into like a bit farcical and a bit like, this now feels a bit low budget and a bit shit.
Breeds.
Yeah.
that's obviously branching off to authenticity, but all them little bits kind of, if this was made for Americans, it's what you'd expect Americans to think of English, well, Scottish football. So, I mean, apart from the guy not looking, because that was just weird. It didn't make any sense at all. But the one that surprised me was the one, his wife or ex-wife and then wife again, where, because she's a voice actress. I've heard her in loads of things, including El Shaddai, the great PS3 game. She just didn't seem to be any good at all in some parts. No. And I look at it, and it was her first job, so fair's fair. But even so, you think how, if you're in the Highlands of Scotland and you're looking for an actress and she's the best they could find, it did look, and when she's playing off against Robert Duvall of all people, it did go a bit, it was a bit weird.
Yeah. So I think, obviously, I've just mentioned that the film was padded out with a shitload of non-league Scottish talent. So the stars of the film, the footballing stars, I've given it a 2. I've given it 1 point purely for Ali McCoist. And then I've given it a 2 point just because there are other players in it, even though the only reason I know most of the players in this film is because I played Championship Manager in the 1990s. That's the only reason I knew half of them. They were all like lower league dreck that you'd never heard of, except for Owen Coyle, I think is the only other one that you'd recognise, but he has zero charisma in this movie.
Well, he has zero charisma in real life. Remember when he tried, he took over at Wolves? How great
he
that
did,
would have
didn't
been.
He, yeah.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, they were proper desperate for him, if I remember correctly, the fan base at one point.
Yeah, because there's your tenuous Wolves link for this programming today. I gave it 3 just because Ali McCoist was a huge, well, and still is a huge star, but at the time, Scotland legend, Rangers legend, weirdly, in this context. But yeah, I mean, you not mentioned as well, Hugh Dallas was a World Cup referee. That was a real...
Yes, of course, yeah.
To get someone like that as well, I mean, fair play to them. The people who they got were... You think of Scottish players at that time, unless you were one of the weirdos like me who watched Scottish football on Sky in the 90s, like you said, you wouldn't have a clue. So for who they got, it's decent enough for me.
Yeah, I gave it a 3, and part of it does bleed into footballing authenticity, I guess, but with Andy Gray being involved as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically, because overall enjoyment is only out of 5, and I didn't want this film to fall bottom of the list, I probably gave it a point elsewhere where I didn't need to. And I don't really know where the strength of the cast falls into this film points wise as well, in terms of like Duvall and Keaton et al. I mean, yeah, I think only the people with a photographic memory or something like that, like Stu, will know some of the dreck that some of these players, and I hope none of them are listening and get offended. But do you know what I mean? It's no Alan Shearer in goal, put it that way. But then again, he gets one line while he's on a leg press machine, so it doesn't really matter. But yeah, I gave it 3 out of 5.
But Ali McCoist was the Scottish Alan Shearer, so in that point, he should get more bonus points. But when you say about Andy Gray, that whole part, the whole kind of studio production was spot on. It was exactly how it was. I mean, he's very good in doing things like this. I mean, he was always good on FIFA as a co-com. He always seemed believable. Whereas you look at who are the Lee Dixon and who's that other bloke on there now?
Derek Ray.
Exactly, who the fuck's that?
Ruben Neves.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's one of the reasons, I mean, mainly because FIFA's a child's game and you should be playing Pro Evo anyway, but it's a very bad sign if you go from people like Martin Tyler to Derek Ray you can't even name. And if they had Derek Ray in this film, that would have been more something you'd kind of expect. But to get Andy, peak Andy Gray as well, peak of his powers before he's the incident. Again, a very good get. So, yeah, a nice punch.
I feel a bit sorry for Derek Ray because he pronounces players as their native tongue would pronounce them when he gets the piss ripped out of him for doing it. So, Bruno
Fernandes. You'll get someone like Bruno that, Fernandes. Though. Yeah. Oh, yes. There's always some prick who thinks that he's big and clever, whereas everyone else, you know, we're not in Portugal. That's why it's not pronounced that way.
Yeah. No one goes around saying Ruben Neves. It's just not on. Yeah. Or leaving or sending WhatsApp messages just to correct people. It's just not on, is it?
Yeah. Just get over yourself, you prick.
I mean, you've got to think. I mean, if this was made now, I mean, who would it be cast as? I mean, you've probably got to think John Fleck, really.
The Scottish superhero John Fleck, yeah. But I think the Andy Gray point, that for me bleeds into the footballing authenticity. So that for me is probably the strongest one. I gave it a 4 out of 5 because, as you say, it does have Andy Gray in the background that gives you that. It does make the matches feel authentic that you've got him on comms. You had Hugh Dallas being the referee. I suppose you could argue, would that be in with the footballing stars as well? But I went down the footballing authenticity for that route. I felt like the actual football that the teams played, like, it looked decent. It looked like two actual footballing teams playing the game. It didn't look like one or two footballers and then 15 actors around them. I thought it was really well done. The editing around it made it look a lot more exciting than it probably was, but it works to its advantage. And I felt that the cup final, it felt like a cup final. They must have filmed it at a cup final because it did have that big match feel. So I thought it was really well done on those side of things.
Yeah, I mean, I gave it a 3, and there was some bones of contention for me. One being, I've seen the Billy Wright celebrate more excitedly than some of the goals being celebrated in this film. Whilst they might have filmed it at real games, the camera, like especially on some of the more narrow shots, it is only on the actors or those characters that we discussed before, and they do not know how to celebrate a goal in any. There are no limbs being waved in this scenario at all. My second, now this might be one for Gully on GTA here, but why do you have your most prolific goal scorer taking your last penalty? It stands to reason. A team as shit as they are do not get to the last penalty with their reserve keeper, and they're playing against the best team in the land. So why do you take the risk of having your best taker take it last? Surely he takes it first to give you the best possible chance of winning.
This happens, though, don't it? This has happened numerous times over the years where...
But why?
I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me either. I mean, I'd go with you. You'd have your best players first and then to get your 3-0 up, but then they worked for Sheffield Wednesday against us in the 90s, did he? Ha ha. So, I mean, it's not weird because it does happen, but it's weird that people think that it's a good idea.
I'm going to need someone to come and give me the 4-1-1 on that. That aside, though, I thought, like you said, I think like the stadium and the set work was done really well. I think it felt real. It didn't feel really forced, and that they've... It quite easily could have looked like they've just bundled them on at halftime, where they were at the halftime show on, just to do like film a few scenes and then do it. They've obviously must have had the backing of like the stadium to do it or something like that. I don't know, but it did feel, it had the essence of like that big match feel, as you said. So I think the football authenticity was good. I just think it was a bit clunky in some of the reasons, you know, some of the really key things like celebrations and stuff like that. And I thought they'd do more around like showing the rivalries between, you know, when you think of like Rangers and Celtic, you think of like rabid crowds. But then when they're playing in that cup final, you don't see any of that at all. The only time you see any kind of dissension is outside the hotel when they're trying to keep him up at night. And then that was really weird because it was like, it got a bit rapey. Because he's like, oh, that's Ally McCoy's wife. Let's chase her. And that was weird. I don't know. I know we're like 21 years on and, you know, there's not this racy, rape horseplay that we might have had back then. But this felt weird. This didn't feel right. I thought it hasn't aged very well here.
Yeah, those two knackers who were just wandering around this hotel, that was odd. Yeah, that one guy had like a serious case of rape face as well, didn't he? Mm. He looked dodgy as fuck. And that whole scene when Ally McCoist and his wife are trying to escape the hotel for a night and they're throwing bottles at them.
Yeah.
And then Ally McCoist ends up trying to beat the shit out of the two of them and telling them it's just a game. That all felt very odd and not at all like within the realms of this film. It felt very out of place.
It's just a game as his face is splitting open, like where he's absolutely battering him.
Yeah. It seemed very much like they needed a reason to for him to be on the bench in the cup final, and that's all they could think of. And it didn't even look part of the same film. It was shot differently to the rest of it. So maybe it was a catch-up later on. I don't know. But, I mean, if you're walking around with a scarf on, not on the day of the game or in winter, then you gotta be something wrong with you, really. But, I mean, and them two definitely had something wrong with them, let's be honest. But, yeah, I think, like I said, I mentioned Dream Team earlier, and I think there was a lot of that going on through the whole film where they used Hearts or St. Johnson and colorized them a bit. And that's why the football looked better than it normally does in these things, because it was real football kind of interspersed with cutaways. And I think using actual players always helps. I think we said it in Parting Meme Machine, where other than the ridiculous bits, it actually looked real because it was a real game. And they just took parts of that game and used them as highlights and edited it down for what they needed. So from that point of view, yeah, I mean, I gave it 5 out of 5. I thought it was absolutely superb, authenticity-wise. I mean, some of the other things, obviously, different. But, yeah, like you've already said, the Andy Gray stuff, the presentation around everything. I mean, there was weird bits like why was Michael Keaton, who we've hardly even mentioned, behind a sliding door? Why was that in the boardroom on his own? That seemed a bit strange. But, yeah, every little bit, even the camera angles of the replays and stuff, that they were as you'd expect, other than the usual things on the camera, on the pitch, zooming in and following someone's head for a header and that kind of bollocks. There was hardly any of that. So, yeah, it just worked really well for me.
It's funny because I must have thought something of the authenticity, because at one point when they were like, I'm pretty sure there was a hat trick of headers in one game, all I was thinking to myself is, play it on the fucking deck. Because it was just all in the air. So it was just literally, I just hoofing it up. But that might be Scottish second division football. I don't know.
Very much was.
Yeah. Brilliant. Right. So we'll have a quick break there and then we'll come back and wrap things up. Hello and welcome to Cage Fighting. To my man, Andy Gillard.
My guy here.
Stu here. Wiki Wawa.
Answering the big questions in film. Who was your first film crush? What cinematic vehicle would you like to own?
What's your favourite film that features a chicken?
Nicolas Cage. Is he a good or is he a bad actor?
You'll have to speak up, I'm wearing a vest.
You always do that, wow, blood, blood. And it goes in my head all the time, and I never knew what it was. If I was going back to my younger days, and when I did actually have a lookalike in Enrique Iglesias.
And remember, be excellent to each other.
Hi everyone, Matt from Wolves Fancast here. If you're anything like me, time is of the essence these days. How am I meant to take training with my wonder kids on the managerial football simulation game that I'm not allowed to mention for legal reasons if I'm too busy worrying about my online media presence? Well, that's where our friends at pixelyetimedia.com come in. They're not just web designers, they're a creative agency that cover all of your design needs, from websites, brochures and signage, to marketing, logo design and branding. So go check them out at pixelyetimedia.com. They'll get you set up quicker than Adama Traore running at a terrified left back. Speaking of which, who's got my baby oil?
So this film, I've had a look, and apparently the budget was $9 million.
Ooh.
I don't believe that. It says estimated when I look on IMDb and Wikipedia, but it also says the box office was $9 million as well. Like, there's no way that this has made $9 million at the box office. So I'm taking that with a pinch of salt. The USA gross alone was $133,000. I can't imagine the rest of the world stumped up the remaining $8.8 million nearly. So, yeah, I find that a bit of an odd one. IMDb has got this down as a 6.3. Rotten Tomatoes has got a 67% critic score and a 65% audience score. So on both accounts, it's considered fresh. As you can imagine, the reviews are middling and mixed. Frank Switek from One Guy's Opinion, as its utterly generic title well suggests, it leaves absolutely no cliche unexploited. Draxbach movie reviews, more like a standard Hollywood product than a celebration of beautiful game. I think that was quite a good point. It does feel like it's quite an Americanized view of the sport rather than what people in Fife, where it was filmed, would have seen the game as. It didn't quite have that that universal view. It did feel like it was coming very much from stateside, I felt. One audience member said, "This is a disgustingly bad movie." How fucking harsh is that? "How an actor of Robert Duvall's quality agreed to make this steaming pile of turd, I will never know. As a fan of Scottish football and culture, all copies of this should be destroyed for harm to the nation. Avoid this movie, as it may harm you mentally for the rest of your life if you don't."
Wowzers.
Yeah. Not everybody was quite that harsh, though. The Movie Chicks said that it's a sports movie with action that's as exciting off the field. As exciting on the field as the story you care about off it. The critical review, which pretty much sums it up best for me, though, is from Kevin Thomas from the LA Times. "Not as distinctive or humour as it needs to be to stand out, but it has clearly been made with affection and care." One fan did go a little bit too far, though. Abdullah A said that Robert Duvall gives the best performance of his life. That's quite the endorsement there. So for the final part, what we've done is I've stolen some of our cage fighting features for the end of it so we can summarise the movie. So we'll start with the good, the bad and the crazy. This is something which we liked, something we didn't like and something that we just thought was a little bit batshit about the movie. So, Stu, do you want to start us off with your good, bad and crazy?
I mean, the good, we've already mentioned it. It was Ally McCoy's acting ability, which is, who knew, basically. It was a lot better than it had any right to be. But yeah, there was a lot of things in this film that were just generally really enjoyable. And I didn't think there would be. I mean, let's get to it. We haven't even mentioned it yet. Robert Duvall's accent. as someone who's been to Scotland, well, spent over 4 days in Scotland in my entire 37 years of life, I've got a few Scottish friends, and to start with I didn't think it was that bad, and then he started talking more and it went Irish and it went all over the place. And I asked my cousin-in-law about this, Danny, and he said that it's as good as Mel Gibson in Braveheart, and that's all you really need to know from an authenticity point of view from that. But yeah, I thought the accent was bad. I mean, I don't think his performance was that bad. I thought he was all right. I thought he threw himself into it more than you'd expect a proper star like him to do. But yeah, I thought Michael Keaton couldn't be arsed, to be fair. I thought he was a bad point.
When we did our cage fighting episode with Paul Clayton, he was talking about an actor who would only do roles as long as he got to sit down in the scenes. And it kind of felt like that's what Keaton was channeling in this movie. He's like, I'll act, I'll give you what I've got, but I'm not leaving this fucking seat, mate. That was very much his acting style.
Yeah, he was When you're out acted by Ally McCoy, so I think you got to have a look at yourself. And yeah, this is, I mean, maybe that's where that $9 million went, and it went for mainly on him. and his seating situation, but yeah, the crazy. I mean, the crazy is the fact that no one's fucking heard of it, and it's just been lost forever. It's been lost for years. It's truly baffling after watching it again and watching it properly, really, for the first time, and with a critical eye as we have now. It was good. It was fun, and it was 2 hours long as well, which normally with these kind of nonsense things that you kind of, oh, you're looking at the clock within 40 minutes or whatever. And I didn't check my phone once. I didn't look up from the screen. I just watched it from start to finish and thoroughly enjoyed it. But, and for no one to know about it, it's just mental.
Mm, yeah. Matt, what's your good, bad and crazy, please?
So for me, the good really, I don't want to ruin it for anybody that's going to watch it, but I suppose this is how these things go. I like the fact that they didn't win in the end.
Mm.
Now, I mean that in that I like that when Rocky Balboa, he didn't win at the end of Rocky Balboa, though there is a cut where he did. But in Rocky Balboa, I like that he didn't beat the world champion Rocky Balboa. It's fine to have like a rags to riches tale when it falls within reason, but this, its tone was always that there's more to life than football in this film. And by having them not win, but actually he gets that pat on the back from his father-in-law and he looks like he's turned his life around with his wife and that as well. I think it was nice. It was good that they did that, that they didn't make this just a football in peace, like when Saturday Comes ended up becoming. So that was the good for me. Duvall's accent has to be up there as the bad, but the thing for me was kind of the small hick townness of the town that they came from had zero charm to it. It was all just oddballs. Now, there are loads of small little quaint towns that, you know, that aren't just full of weirdos, and I just thought to kind of jam that comedic element in just felt a little bit out of place for the film. It didn't need it. It didn't need like some of the stranger characters that were in it. It just felt a little bit like you don't really know what line you want to take here. So it just felt a bit late. Not lazy. I just think it was like, we're not sure if we're going serious. We're not sure if we're going sport. Let's stick a bit of comedy in there. Then it covers all bases. Maybe that's the American audience. Maybe that's what they like compared to us. Whereas we want to see the grit of the Scottish, you know, football in doldrums, so to speak. The crazy for me is all I could think about was I've come to the end of mind, but if Michael Keaton was recast as Vince Vaughn. Because I just think this is Vince Vaughn's case. Give it like 5 or 6 or 7 years, that would have been Vince Vaughn. Exactly the same type of person would have played that. The nonchalant and brash American owner who comes in and wants to transform that team. And I thought Vince Vaughn was born for this role if this film was about 7 or 8 years later.
Yeah, that's fair. My good, bad and crazy, I'm echoing Stu's sentiment on the good. Ally McCoist was the standout in this film. He brought some real heart to that character. It was a really, it was a deep performance from someone you wouldn't associate that with. Granted, it's not much of a stretch for him to play a cheeky Scottish legend, but he managed to put in an understated performance against some actual, bona fide legendary actors. I was really impressed with that. And an understatement is not something you associate with someone like Ally McCoist, who, as we said before, he's quite loud, he's very funny, always cracking the jokes. But there were times in this film where he looked down and he looked like he was struggling, and you genuinely believed that that could have been him almost. I think he did a really good job. And that's something that Vinnie Jones still hasn't been able to do in any of his films. He's always just playing Vinnie Jones, loudmouth, hard bastard. So I think Vinnie could do with taking some lessons from Ali, to be honest, in this. The bad, I like, the one thing I love is, I'm a big fan of Scotland, and I love watching Scottish films because they all have this unique identity to them. They all feel intrinsically Scottish, but this didn't. Like, if you took away the accents of this, that could have been in any village in any part of the world, let alone the UK. There was nothing particularly Scottish that came across in it. I found that quite disappointing. I wanted something like that and I wasn't given it. So that's my bad. And my crazy, the bit, so I know I've mentioned it before, but when McCoist was fighting those two Rangers fans, telling them that it's only a game, and he was pointing out the issues around the religious nature of the derby between the two Glasgow clubs, it seemed like quite a big message to be putting in a film. And I think that some could do well to hear that message. But it felt kind of wasted in a film that probably hasn't been seen by more than us three and a few other people here and there. So that's my... It was a big message in a small film, but yeah. So, did you enjoy this film? So that's our overall enjoyment of the film, basically. Matt, what are you saying?
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. And I don't know if that was because of my incredibly low expectations of a film with a cover like that, and B, a film that Stu's recommended. So, and I was very pleasantly surprised. Really, really enjoyed it. I thought it was fantastic, and the mark of a good film is that I immediately told about three different groups that I'm in on WhatsApp. You need to watch this immediately. It's on YouTube, which is probably the only time I've ever actually considered subscribing to like premium YouTube, because there were so many adverts through it. It was unbelievable. But yeah, I thought it was fantastic. Really, really good. Really, really good watch. I'd like to see if Ali McCoist has done any podcasts or any YouTube or any shows where he talks about his experience of the films. I think it'd be really interesting to listen to.
There is a clip on said YouTube of him talking to Robert Duvall probably about last year or the year before. So like a kind of reunion special.
Oh, nice. I'll have to watch that.
I haven't watched it yet either. I just saw it when I was looking for the trailer earlier, and I saw it then. But yeah, it seems to be back in the... even that, it doesn't seem to have had many views, and it hasn't been mentioned since. So it's just cursed.
Brilliant. If Ali's listening, we'd love to have you on to discuss this film sometime. It'd be fantastic. Stu, did you enjoy the film?
Absolutely. Absolutely loved it. And it's always kind of dangerous where you kind of recommend films from the past without seeing them for a long time. And obviously other than Transformers. But yeah, I was kind of trepidatious with it, thinking, is this me pimping this film out so badly? So yeah, we need to do this. We need to do it now. And they turned out so well. It was kind of like a yes moment, which doesn't happen very much for me, especially not in lockdown. But yeah, I absolutely loved it. And same as Matt, I've recommended it to, I've put the trailer on Facebook earlier. I've sent it to as many people as I think will even bother listening to me to watch it. Yeah, just if you got this far and you haven't watched it, just go and do it. Just use YouTube Advanced and don't pay. No adverts on there. Yeah. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah, I thought for the most it was fine. Like, it wasn't excellent. It wasn't dreadful. It was relatively coherently made film. It had a narrative flow and structure. Was well acted, apart from Duvall's accent. So it's mostly yes, really. I've given it 2.5 out of 5 because I just felt it was straight down the line for me. It was fine. No more, no less. And that's perfectly acceptable. So the other question we ask is, would Nick Cage improve this movie? For me, all day. I genuinely think I would like to see him do Robert Duvall's manager character as the face-off version of Nick Cage. So that proper, highly strung, about to lose his shit. That's the Nick Cage I want. On the touchline, going apeshit crazy every time they miss a shot. And I want to hear him try and do a Scottish accent, because we've heard a few of his films where he's tried accents and they are not good, generally speaking. But yeah, Nick Cage would definitely improve this movie in my eyes. Stu?
For that reason, and that he doesn't do accents very well, I would have just said just replace Michael Keaton with Nicolas Cage from Snake Eyes. And for that reason, it'd just be more entertaining. And a crazy American is more funny than and entertaining than a bland American. Let's just put it that way. And would have made more sense in the kind of, oh yeah, he's so insane that he wants to move this whole club to a different country. it would have worked better for me. So, yeah, obviously.
Matt?
Yeah, along the same lines as Stu, really. I think he would have given some charisma to that bit of the role. Though, at this point in his career, what was he doing? Was this around... It wasn't, it was too early for Ghost Rider, isn't it? And
yeah, so 99 would have been after he won his Oscar for Las Vegas. And he would have done Face Off.
So I'm not sure if it would have fit this into his schedule or if this would have been around his wheelhouse. But I think he could have given charisma to the owner role anyway.
Oh, he'd definitely be up with for the remake with Scott McTominay and John Fleck. Absolutely.
Yeah, so 1999, Nick Cage would have done a run of Leaving Las Vegas, The Rock, Con Air, Face Off, City of Angels, Snake Eyes, 8mm, Bringing Out the Dead. And then to have gone into this would have been fucking superb. So the final scores on this one, I gave it a 12.5 out of 25. As I said, on my overall enjoyment, it was straight down the line for me. Stu and Matt, you've both given it 15 out of 25. So that gives it an overall score of 56%. That puts A Shot at Glory into fifth, which is 1 point behind Final Score and 2 ahead of When Saturday Comes. I'm all right with that. I think that's
about right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah,
that's fair.
It's only the only reason it's so low down is because no one knows about it, so it's got no cultural impact. That is the only thing it's missing. Because everything else, I mean, I rank it really highly. I mean, even for me, ranking things highly because I've got no taste. It was a good thing, but it's just let down by that, and that's the only reason it's so low. Because it's better. It's more enjoyable than Final Score. But it just hasn't got an impact.
Oh, wash your mouth out. Final Score's fucking brilliant. So I want you to finish this sentence. If you enjoyed A Shot at Glory, you may also like. Matt?
Ooh, gosh. I think, and I think this is an unfair portrayal of what Robert Duvall can do. So I want you to go, if you liked A Shot at Glory and you enjoyed parts of Robert Duvall's accent when he does it well, I want you to go and watch Falling Down, which incidentally we did an Uncaged episode on, because it's a fantastic film. But Robert Duvall's character actually has a bit of depth and actually he's played well without any hokey accents. So go watch Falling Down, available now on Netflix also.
Yeah, great choice that is. Stu?
I mean, I've already mentioned it. If you want to, again, take inspiration from Robert Duvall's accent, go and watch Braveheart, because why not?
That's as good a reason as any, I suppose. I've gone for a film in the late 80s called Major League. It's a similar sort of premise. So the synopsis is the new owner of the Cleveland Indians puts together a purposely horrible team so they lose and she can move the team. But when the plot is uncovered, they start winning just to spite her. It's a good, fun film. It's like early Charlie Sheen when he was just crazy, not like off his bins on drugs crazy. It's got old school Tom Berenger in there, Rene Russo, Wesley Snipes. Cracking film. I'd definitely recommend that one if you enjoyed this film. So that's another film in the books. Please check out our other Filmcast episodes. If you go onto our website, we've got our own little segment on there and it's got all the back catalogue kept together. Obviously, whilst you're on that website, you may as well check out our other podcasts and specials. If you prefer something more visual, though, please ensure you're subscribed to our YouTube channel. And finally, please make sure you come and join us on Cage Fighting to continue the chat about film and television. So for this Filmcast special, Matt, would you like to say goodbye?
Take it easy, guys. Look after yourselves.
Stu, would you like to say goodbye?
Not long until the pub's open, boys and girls. Countdown begins. Ta-ra.
And it's goodbye from me. And remember, be excellent to each other.